right, welcome back. It's another Behind the Yellow Line. We got Jeremy and Randall here tonight. Lots happening. The Cubs making some roster moves. We want to talk about that. The tough injury for Caleb Killian. We'll certainly touch on that and some other things going on with spring training. But I was thinking about maybe starting with this. Is there one more move left for the Cubs to make here before opening day? Is it going to happen?
Yes, I think so. I think so very firmly. I do think they find a way to bring in one more starting pitcher, maybe a depth guy, maybe a guy who'd be like your sixth starter or whatever. But I do think they make a mid to late camp trade or maybe a surprising free agent signing. But I do think there's one more move coming.
Randall, are you buying into Craig Counsell saying, hey, where's Jordan Montgomery out here? Why aren't you bringing Jordan Montgomery, Scott Forrest? You think of Jordan Montgomery as a possible
here? Well, if it works out, I'm buying into it. If it doesn't work out, then no, I'm not buying into it. Let's go with that.
Well, I don't know. I feel like unless they do make a major move like a Montgomery, I feel like this roster is pretty much set. Like this, these are the guys they're going to go with. So I don't really think they're going to make, you know, a small move. I think it's either going to be bringing one of these guys, the Boris guys, or just go with it.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm thinking about this rather idly this week, Ronan. I know it's been a topic of discussion for you with our good friend Greg Kerner. How long it takes for a guy to get ready, whether the extended free agency is hurting some guys. I think Bellinger and his counterpart across the former free agent infield, Chapman, I think they'll be fine. But we sit here recording this tonight on the evening of March 8th. It is less than 3 weeks until opening day, and neither Montgomery nor Snell is in a camp anywhere. I have to think that even if one of these guys is to sign this second as we record, which they might, maybe Passan can throw us a bone while we're recording, it's going to be difficult for them to get ready for opening day. You don't need to be ready for opening day. You can do creative things with the off days, but I have to think now we're getting to the point where it's going to start affecting these guys.
How different though, like this roster looks like if Montgomery were to work out, it completely changes the whole feel here going into opening day. And it really addresses maybe the other lingering question right now is there another veteran type guy or quality pitcher that they can add to the starting rotation? And they've got a lot of interesting younger arms, but can they add one more guy? Jordan Montgomery would be awesome to add in here. And it would make you feel a lot more confident that this team is now going to win the division, not maybe compete for the division. You add a guy like that, the expectation is you're going to win this division.
I think Jordan Montgomery would be the starting pitching equivalent of Matt Chapman, the move that I think puts you over the top. It's not a high bar. It's not a great division, but it would be the move that would put you over the top projection wise. I just have less faith that Montgomery is actually going to end up here than I did Chapman, and Chapman did not end up here. So I guess we go from not a high bar to an especially low bar.
Right. And also not only just, you know, any threshold in terms of playing or in winning the division, right? But also a move, whatever move, I think, once they start, if they add anything, that's going to put them over the, you know, CBT, the tax threshold, pretty much, because they're right up on it right now. So that's part of the reason why I think they're not going to make a small move to put themselves over the tax. If they're going to put themselves over the tax, they're going to make a big move. Like, it's got to be somebody that makes it worth it for them, because they're probably holding till the deadline, right, to see where they are. Hopefully in a positive light, and they'll trade to get over that tax light. And if I assume in a negative light, hopefully not, they'll just trade pieces off to make sure that they're under the tax for the rest of the season. I assume that will be. But so that's part of the reason. Like, and for me, I assume these guys are pitching, right? I assume they're working out. I mean, it's not the same as training, but like you said, Randall, with the off days, if they're working out, I feel like, you know, that you could get them into rhythm in mid to late April, you know. But who knows? We've seen guys pitch come in real late and not work out. We've seen Dallas Keuchel, Craig Kimball missing all of spring training and definitely not working out for those teams.
Yeah, I feel like it's much more a record of it going poorly, at least for guys in the early going, when they don't really have a full spring to really get stretched out. Ronan, last time we recorded, you mentioned how with Bellinger out of the so-called Boris 4, JD Martinez kind of gets promoted to take that roster spot. Chapman has signed since we last recorded, so that's another one of the Boris 4. Are there any other Boris guys out there who get promoted to take that vacant slot?
I don't think so.
Oh, so we're officially down to the Boris. So officially down to the Boris 3 now.
But Martinez, you know, who knows? Like, if that could be a guy, if they think that they have a spot, like a DH spot, right? That they could put in there. they have a lot of holes, in my opinion, still in this offense. So I don't know. I don't think they're going to make a move, another move. I kind of feel like this is the roster they have, but I do think if they do make a move, it's going to be something that puts them over the top. I that's just the way I see it personally.
Well, the longer this plays out with, let's say, Montgomery as an example, does either side get more leverage? Like, does it benefit the player the longer this plays out? Does it benefit the team? Like, do the Cubs have a better opportunity now signing him that we're at this point, this close to opening day? Where do you think that tips?
It benefits the team easily because, again, the closer and closer you get to opening day, you can be as creative as you want with off days. You're still going to need time to ramp up. And, you know, you might be getting to the point where if you sign a starting pitcher right now, even though they have been working out, like Jeremy said, there's no substitute for, you know, getting into a actual game situation and getting stretched out that way. You might get to the point where a guy has to somehow start the season on the IL or start the season, maybe even in the minors to get ramped up. It's not something anyone wants to do, but I have to think at this point it benefits the team because you're going to get the guy for a lot less money. I don't think the player is benefited at all by continuing to wait.
I agree with you in terms of like leverage. I think it benefits the team. I think at this point, you know, we're going the season. You're not on a team. You're not getting paid. You don't have a job, right? So I think the players might get a little desperate at some point, right? Because it's hard to see. The later this goes, it becomes harder and harder to see like a major in terms of like major deal, multi-year big contract, right? You almost kind of think, well, maybe you just get something for this season and try again next year. Like look at the contracts that like Keuchel signed mid-season, of course. That was just for that year. Like, and then he was a free agent again. So I just think it's harder. I think that part makes it harder for a player because I feel like they got to be getting restless. They got to be getting anxious. I'm not on a team.
Families want them out of the house.
Yeah. So like the team is all set. Like we're just going with our guys and we're going to pitch. And if we can break this guy down, hey, if you want to come back for a nice price, we'll Brad you. But if not, hey, we're moving forward. So I don't think the teams are going to get desperate. I think the players are going to get desperate first at this point. And like I said, I'm not too worried about at this point, the offseason guy I don't think that's going to be a major factor. But I think desperation, anxiety, like those things could definitely play into it.
I'm just looking at this roster and I'm fairly optimistic about this team. I think this team's going to be competitive, but you throw a guy like Montgomery into the mix here and it changes everything. So I'd love to see it happen. Who knows what goes on here over the next couple of weeks, but that would really be an awesome addition. And just a spark here going into opening day, like, wow, we made a statement here at the end of spring training and we're ready to go.
No secret, you would like it to happen. Do you think it will happen though?
No, it should happen because it makes them the immediate favorite, the outright favorite to win the division. But I don't think it's going to happen, but it should. But I don't know what will happen.
Yeah. Oh, I wish any of us knew what would happen. It'd be a lot easier, you know, to do these.
I know it's going to happen. I can't tell anyone though, or I'll lose my clairvoyance. Sorry.
Oh, well, now Randall's just holding it from us. That's disappointing, Rand. I thought we were friends and you could just tell us because you'd be a cool guy like that. But yeah, I'm going to put it. I think it's unlikely they make another addition during spring training. Unless, like I said before, somehow they find a way, Jordan Montgomery, to get in there or something. I just don't. I mean, maybe like something small, like a minor league deal. Again, they could bring more minor league guys. But I think right now the roster they have is the roster we're going to start the season with.
Yeah, well, it's getting close now. Towards opening day. Cubs making some roster moves today. 12 guys, I think, and all sent down to minor league camp, but some big names in that group. A couple that aren't a big surprise, Owen Casey, Matt Shaw, down to the minors. But PCA, like we sort of expected once Cody came on that PCA wasn't going to make the team, and I guess now it's official. He's going to open the year in Iowa.
Yeah, it's not surprising with Bellinger on the roster. I think the writing was on the wall. You know, I do think he'll be up sooner versus later. If heaven forbid there's any kind of injury in the outfield, he's probably going to be one of the first guys up. But I hope he's really able to hit down at Iowa, because even in the incredibly small sample size, I think there's a teeny bit of doubt creeping in. Maybe a modicum, an iota, a tiny kernel. And I think starting the season at Iowa on a good offensive pace, I think would help get some of that confidence back.
I think it's a good thing for him. I that's funny when the I saw this come out, you know, the tweet with all these guys being make it. The first thing I thought of in my head was the Radiohead song, No Surprises, because I was like, no, this is surprising to me. Not, no surprises here. So I think that PCA, it makes sense to start him in Iowa. I think, you know, I yeah, the defense is gonna play. He's still great defensively, but I still think it makes sense for him to work on some things in Iowa. I mean, he didn't play that much in
No,
terms
tiny,
of
tiny sample size.
right. It's well, I'm talking about in AAA last year. He didn't play that much in terms of just AAA last year because he didn't make it there until midseason. And then, you know, so it's not like he's a huge track record in AAA. So you might, I think just getting him down there again, working on more things, I think it'll be good for him in the long run. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know when we'll see him. It depends. I mean, it's going to depend on a lot of things because it depends on how Michael Bush plays, how Cody Bellinger plays, how a lot of different guys plays, because the Cubs can have a lot of options, how PCA obviously plays. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's up, you know, in 3 weeks. It wouldn't surprise me if he's not up till June or July. So but I do think right now it makes the most sense to start him in Iowa.
Yeah, and Jeremy, I think you make a good point. There are some pieces on this roster that not unknowns, but maybe more variable. Michael Bush and Mike Tauchman among them. I think if either of those two guys were to get hurt or to really falter, PCA would come up. Tauchman, if he's, you know, not really a useful piece, you either demote or jettison him. PCA comes up. And if Bush struggles, he goes down. Bellinger probably plays a lot more first. PCA comes up and splits center field with Tauchman. So there's a lot of potential moving parts on the roster. And I think PCA will factor in as those things start to settle.
Yeah, you guys both talking about Michael Bush. I think that's going to be fun. Like his at bats in April, getting to see him on a day-to-day basis in the major leagues, that's going to be a really important storyline at the beginning of the season. Because then, obviously, if he struggles and PCA is doing fine, you move Bellinger over. But what if he hits? What if he's for real? I mean, you can't do anything else in the minors now. It's time to figure out if this guy's a major leaguer. That's really going to be compelling TV, I think, early on in the season.
Yeah, it'll be
Right.
fun to watch.
He's 26 years old, so like
Yeah.
it's now or never for a Michael Bush. And Michael Bush has been a guy that, you know, people have like, this guy's been blocked in Los Angeles forever, and Freddie Freeman now coming over and blocking him. So like he's not getting a chance. So he's got to have that opportunity, and this is his chance. And if he shows that he can sustain like that minor league hard hit rate and then all the gaudy numbers he put up in the minors, and not necessarily like he did last year, where he's just hitting balls into the ground when he got his cup of coffee in the majors, then yeah, he's here to stay, and that'll be a great win. But if not, as you mentioned, like you can just move Bellinger over. And I think the Cubs kind of run into the same problem that they had last year a little bit with PCA, is I feel like they're so kind of lefty heavy that like in terms of Bellinger, Bush again is a lefty, Tauchman's a lefty. So it's hard for like it where are you going to find a places for PCA to play, because he's kind of just the same as all these other guys. So it's not like you, if he was right-handed, you could just give him when like Bush is off or Tauchman's off or something like that. It would make sense. You could just put PCA in. But now if he's lefty, it's like, well, all these other guys are lefty too. So I just see like that bit of roster kind of like flexibility that they don't quite have there.
Lots going on here as we get closer to opening day. Anything else regarding roster cuts today that had either of your attention? Like Ben Brown, I saw people talking about that going, oh, maybe he could have made the big league team. Anything else?
You know, Jeremy quoted a, you know, song, No Surprises. There wasn't really anybody cut today that really makes me go, wow, I thought this guy had a chance. I think the minor league veterans that you have in camp that might have a chance, most of them are still hanging around. The early cuts aren't typically a surprise, honestly. It's when you get to the second round, when you get to the third round, your non-roster invitees start to hit their opt-out dates. That's when you start to get a few surprises. Really, this round, it's your prospects and your kind of bubble guys with plenty of options generally go down. Really, nothing that jumped out at me today.
Ben Brown is probably the one guy that I looked at and I
Sure.
was like, well, you know, he looked pretty great the other night when I saw him pitching. Two nights was against the Reds, I don't know, or Royals maybe. It was a night game, one of the night games, and I was like, damn, Ben Brown, he was throwing some nasty pitches. And I thought, you know, there's a guy that at some point should help the Cubs in the bullpen this season, I think. But right now, I just don't see the necessity to have Ben Brown in the bullpen, especially because, you know, bullpen flexibility is so hard because there's going to be so many guys that don't have options. Ben Brown obviously has options. You can start him in Iowa. He did struggle a little bit last year, and he was hurt, obviously, at some point with control or command, at least walk. So it just makes sense to me to give him that start in Iowa. Yeah, if he pitched lights out and was amazing, and like we need to have this guy on the roster now, I can understand Ben Brown making the team, but I just don't see that need right this moment. So to me, it makes sense to send him down.
Yeah, I think that's another guy who will potentially be up sooner versus later, already on the 40 man, which takes away the hardest part. Again, if he's pitching well in Iowa, I think we've all predicted he might come up in a bullpen role first, a guy who can give you two or three innings a game, two or three times a week. That's something I'm watching out for. One name that did catch my eye, it's not really a surprise because there's no place on the big league roster for him, and that's Luis Vasquez. He got one of those coveted 40-man spots over the winter. He's been in obviously big league camp with the Cubs as a result of that. That is a player I'm really watching because we saw the bat emerge last year. The glove has always been the selling point. I'd really like to see kind of what he can do at the major league level, but the problem is, if problem it is that if he's up, it probably means that somebody is hurt. And we don't want to see that. Like if he's up, it probably means that one of Horner or Swanson is on the IL, and we don't want to see that. That's not going to help this team at all. So I would like to see kind of what he can do at the major league level. I don't want to see that as a result of an injury. So it's kind of a catch 22, which is my favorite kind of catch because that's my number.
Oh, there we go. Catch 22 for Randall. Yeah, Luis Vasquez. I would have been really surprised if he made the team because
No,
I
there was
think
I
that.
had never had any expectation he was going to make the team. It's just a guy I've been enjoying watching in camp so far this spring because we know what the glove can do as a guy who can give you quality work at second, short, and third. And like we said, the bat really came around to the minors last year. I would like to see kind of what they have in him. There's just again, there's no place on the roster for him, and that's a good problem to have.
And he probably still needs a lot more time in the minors.
A
I know he's
lot, yes.
good, but he just kind of right there. I will say one thing I am surprised about is the fact that I thought Ronan would give me much more, a little bit of love here for my Radiohead reference of No Surprises, and I was a
Yes.
little
No, I
disappointed in
do like
him.
it. No,
Okay.
that's fair. That's fair. I did like it though. I just didn't want to slow you down. You were
No, that's fine.
moving,
Any surprises for you?
No. And I think it's nice, like clearing the air with the PCA at this point instead of it dragging out closer to opening day. I think that's like best for everybody. I'm sure the decision was made a long time ago and then solidified when Cody came in, but it's out of the way, right? And these guys are still going to be around. Like they can still play in Major League spring training games. So we'll still see some of these guys.
Shaw was among the round of cuts today, and he still started at third base
Yeah. He
here in
homered
the split
today.
squad games. He did homer
He
today.
hit a home
I don't
run.
know. I don't know how that ball quite got out. It didn't really look
Yeah.
like it had it off the bat.
I had the
It
same
might have
thought.
been. It might have been because Zaidman was on the TV call today, and the ball wanted to get as far away from him as possible, so it willed itself to get over the fence. But yeah, these guys will all still be around. They'll all still be getting starts. They'll all still be getting appearances later on in the games. It just means they're not going to break camp with the big league team. And most of these guys, I don't think anybody thought that would be the case.
Jeremy, what's the early feel here on Shaw? You've said in our group chat, defense not looking so good. Like, what's your feel here a couple weeks in watching him play?
So I've had some mixed feelings on Matt Shaw in terms of so I'm watching him at second base and I feel like I'm watching him there's some kind of plays that should be made that Matt Shaw is not quite making. And I almost like my first thought to my head is like, this guy's turning into Dan Uggla because this guy can hit. But then I remember that, oh, well, everybody will remember that game in like the All-Star game where he made like 3 errors in a row on what should have been plays. I'm like, this is Matt Shaw. And then I see him at third base. And the last couple nights at third base, he's made some like really good plays at third. And I'm thinking, that's weird because he was a second baseman in kind of college, middle infielder more. And I will say I am a little scared of the arm at third because there was one nice play I think he made today I saw a highlight of. He had a really nice stop, but just couldn't quite get the out because he couldn't make the throw to first because it was a ball that was hit to his right. He dove for it, stopped, tried to make the throw across the diamond, and it was just kind of bouncing. And I'm like, stronger arm guy, third baseman, probably getting that out there. So that does worry me a little bit if you put him at third base, but like the guy can hit. I think it's pretty clear he can hit. He hit a home run out. Both Randall and I saw the highlight, and we were like, how the hell did that ball get out? Because that looked like a pop-up or a and that just kept going. Maybe it was the Arizona air humidity. But I think I'm excited for Matt Shaw. I have a lot of optimism for him. I'd love the pick. I just think there's a lot of stuff he still needs to work on. So, like, I've heard people talk about Matt Chapman because to me, I thought Matt Chapman would fit perfectly. And they're like, well, we have Matt Shaw. And I'm like, I just don't see Matt Shaw like in
They're not the
2024,
same just because they're
2025,
both Mets.
right? Being the guy who's going to take, I think he still needs some work, particularly on the defensive end, still in the minors. So like he needs some seasoning, but I think he's going to be a good player. I think he's going to hit. And we all like a, infielder that can hit bombs. Hopefully a Ryan Sandberg type.
Yeah, the bat is there. I don't think there's any question. Again, you're benefiting from having the universal DH now. If he is just destroying double A or triple A even at midseason, and you're like, okay, we need this bat in the lineup, you come up and he DHs and you figure the defense out kind of on the fly. That's fine. I tend to think that if Nick Madrigal can turn himself into a capable third baseman with his just complete kind of lack of tools in some regards, I tend to think that Matt Shaw can probably do the same, but I agree it's going to take a little bit of time. I think we're all going to be keeping an eye on those Tennessee lineups each night and see where he's penciled in, whether it's second, short, or third. I tend to think they're going to move him towards all three, but with a particular focus on third. I think they're going to do a lot with trying to strengthen the arm through exercises, and I think they're going to get him as many reps there as they can to see if maybe you have a major league third baseman and not just a major league bat in Matt Shaw.
Yeah, can I just say one thing? And this is not anything about, because I don't think you're necessarily wrong on this, Randall. It's just insane to say to me, like, Nick Madrigal, who was the number four draft pick in the league, and you're like, well, he has no tools. And I'm like, and I'm not saying I disagree with you. That's just like an insane statement to me, because he was number four draft pick, he was the top prospect, and you look at him, you're like, what, Nick Madrigal? He just what is there that got him a top five? And I remember Nick Madrigal college, he was awesome. But like, what's there that got him to be a top five pick? It's
Well,
crazy.
not for nothing. Remember which organization made him
That's
that top
true.
five pick.
That's true. And one other thing is, we're talking all about Madrigal third base, and I realize this is more of a minors guys that got set down, but I feel like almost be remiss to not talk about the fact that Christopher Morel is kind of going through these same things right now, that he's going to have to do this on the major league level, right? That Christopher Morel, he the other night, he had some bad throws. He had some errors.
It's
And I thought for the most part, he's looked pretty fine at third base, but like, I don't, it's the opposite of Madrigal, right? It's not a question of the tools. He's got the arm
Right.
to get into the ball to third base, even Shaw. But it's some footwork issues, some, throwing issues. It's gonna be, I think, a work in progress this season. I know they want to give him that opportunity. And I thought it was interesting reading an article about that today in The Athletic, I believe. So Saadev Sharma, I think, wrote it, not Mooney, or maybe Patrick Mooney, but I think it was Sharma. He was talking about how, like, he had some quotes from Council about how they just want him to go out there and play, right? They just want him to give him the opportunity to, because the only way he's going to get better is by doing it, by, having the failures, as Craig Council said. He has to fail to get better. Whereas last year, the Cubs were like, we don't think he can handle it. We don't necessarily
Yeah.
think, we don't, we're too worried about putting him out there because we want to win. And like, so like, we're worried, and that, could stunt his development. Because it was a good point that I didn't think about. He has barely any time in the minors. Like, remember he came up as like an injury replacement, I think, in 2022, and he just tore the, like, from double A, and he just tore the
Yeah.
cover off the ball. And he was, and we everybody thought he'd be up for like a week, and he just stayed because he just kept hitting. And yeah, he had that
He
like
made
month last
himself
year.
indispensable.
But he, it was a point. It's like he really hasn't had any development because they've needed his bat in the lineup so much, and they've been too worried to put him out there in the field, that I thought it was like interesting to think, oh, this is where maybe a different coaching staff comes in, see something differently, or a different manager at least. And it's like, hey, put him out there, give him the opportunity. Let's just see what we got. We're going to live with some bad plays. There's going to be bad errors. It's going to happen at least early in the season. We got great defense in Dansby and Nico and other places, but we're going to see some bat. And hopefully the bat makes up for it early. And then maybe he can improve. Maybe he can learn. Maybe he can be that guy in the future. So I just thought that was interesting,
Yeah,
reading that today.
this is still a borrowed thought, but again, I think Morel's first, 1,000 innings at major league third base might be rough, and then the rest of his career, he will be perfectly serviceable there. Like you said, it's not a question of the tools, unlike some of his infield teammates. It's a question of the reps, and it's a question of can he do it? And I tend to believe he can because I don't think that's a work ethic, and I don't think that's a set of physical tools you can truly count out. And like you said, I think it might be rough in the early going. I think there's going to be some airmailed throws on what seem like routine plays, and I think you're just going to live with it as long as the bat is producing as it has, and I think you're just going to say work it out and get better at it. And this is, I'm not calling David Ross Dusty Baker by any stretch, but it does seem like there was a very short leash on certain things. He tried Morel in the outfield a little bit last year. It didn't go perfectly at all times. I said, you know what, just go back to DHing, just worry about hitting. But it is good that they're giving him that chance.
Right. And I think that's also kind of my point you just mentioned is like a lot of times when we see the manager change and people are dismissive of it or whatever, but there are things that like kind of go behind the scenes that we don't really see, right? It could be everybody's thinking like, well, does he maybe make a pitching change? Does he make like a steal attempt or something? But like just giving a guy an opportunity because like his thought process is different than what David Ross's thought process. David Ross is like, we can't risk having these errors. And he's like, hey, we got to give him like that. That's just like a just a different tactic kind or strategy, I guess, would be more of a strategy than a tactic. That like those are things that like behind the scenes that you don't think about when you have a new face come in, new head, new brain. So I just thought it was interesting that Craig they kind of juxtaposed, you know, what they were doing last year. Didn't mention Ross by name, just said coaching staff and
No,
other things,
right.
and Craig what Craig Council was saying about this year.
Well, you're not just a manager of the game, you are a manager of people too.
Yeah. We'll make our official predictions before opening day, but are either of you leaning towards Morel as the team leader in home runs?
Yeah, I'll take that. Sure.
I'm leaning against it because
Okay.
I gotta pick my here's the problem, right? If I pick a guy to lead the team in home runs, that means they're gonna be terrible this year and probably DFA'd by
We
midseason. So I don't want to put that on Morel.
all do have
No.
some very serious jinxing powers that we do need to be careful with.
Not one of them.
Ronan has them. I have them. Jeremy has them. I think probably in order of the strength of our jinxing powers. So we do need to be careful with that. I agree, Jeremy.
I not one of the three guys that I have picked to lead the team in home runs. Each of I think we've done this 3 years for seasons
This will be our, yes, this
has
will.
finished the season as a Cub when we picked
This
them.
will be
Not one.
our fourth opening day's worth of predictions. So
Yeah,
maybe
looking
we
forward
should
to
be
it.
more careful. I
So
agree.
I'm not gonna pick Christopher Morel because whoever I
No.
pick is not gonna be. They're all new players too. They're all additions, and not one of them has finished as a Cub. So I'm not picking Chris.
Well, we'll see where it goes. We'll get that in before opening day. Always look forward to that. We'll also do our who's going to win each division, who's going to win the major awards. And then we'll be totally wrong, all of us on all of it. R Randall did okay last
I
year. I felt
did.
like
I did do
he
okay.
certainly
I did
performed
pretty
better
good
than
in the
I did.
awards.
So I remember Randall's accolades more than yours, Jeremy. It's just sort of how all that
I
plays
got like
out.
the entire AL right. That was pretty insane.
Randall, I do have a question for you. How inconvenient to you are spring training injuries?
How inconvenient, it depends on the severity. A lot of guys go through the general soreness salute. I think it's a matter of how long it keeps them out of games because that's what spring training is. You get your reps in. I think missing a week early on is the sort of thing you can overcome, but when it starts to snowball, then you start to worry a little bit. So it's a question of severity. I know that you kind of expect that general soreness, and when a guy does miss a week, you don't think much of it. But I like guys to stay healthy, and some guys have a history, and when it's the same injury that pops up, even if it only does keep them out for 4 days or a week, you start to worry a little bit whether it's going to be endemic throughout the season.
Yeah, it's just such a bummer, I
Yeah.
think. Like it's like one of the biggest bummers in baseball, in my opinion, are spring training injuries. And we'll talk about some of them. Guys with, like you said, Randall, general soreness a couple days, whatever. Caleb Killian missing now half the season at least. That's a major bummer. Like you know what I'm saying, Jeremy. I think you're on the same page as me.
Oh, Caleb Killian for me is a major bummer because I think I mentioned a couple times on this podcast each couple of weeks that I'm like, hey, this Caleb Killian, he might be riding the ship here. He might be making a way back to being on the radar, like
Yeah.
somebody interesting. And then for what happened after, and he was pitching pretty okay in that game, pretty decent. For what happened, once I heard Craig Counsell say, it's concerning, I was like, that's not good. That's not
Yeah, no,
good.
you never want to hear that.
Yeah, and that was before I think he got the MRI, and then they had the MRI, and then it's out until at least the All-Star break. And I don't even know what this injury is. I just know it's a shoulder injury. But I'm like, I've never even heard of that one before. So I don't know how many other players have had it or who's come back from that one. So that's a disappointing one for me. I mean, there's also kind of like the disappointment where, to me, I really want these guys that we traded for to hit. because I want it to feel worth it, right? And so, like, thinking of Chris Bryant, like, this is the Caleb Killian,
Yeah.
like Alexander Canario. I want these guys to be good just because of that, kind of. I want Alcantara to be good. I want, I feel pretty good about Pucro Armstrong, but like, I want all these guys to be good. And Caleb Killian has been up and down, and I just feel like he's getting that opportunity to come back, and they just have this setback. To me, that's just so disappointing. It really, that's the one that's like, all these other ones are, and they're annoying, but that one, like, that one was disappointing. I was legitimately disappointed to hear about Caleb Killian's injury. And when you see the other teams, you see like Sonny Gray having problems or other players, you're like, oh yeah, yeah, good for them, right? And then you look back at our team, you're like, oh wait, we have our own hamstring strains as well. That's not fun. But
Yeah.
I have a question though. What do you read about, like, a hamstring strain or something, do you ever, like, you first you hear it, you just like rub your hamstring or something, like, ah,
No,
that feels like a
instinctively
hurt,
grab.
like instinctively, yeah, like I don't know, Rayo, do you feel general soreness when you hear about general
No,
soreness?
I try not to salute general soreness. I'm rather insubordinate in that regard. But it kind of I don't like reach for it, but you certainly think about the phantom pain.
Yeah.
What these guys do every day, the running, the stopping, and you think, ah, God, that just has to feel terrible. You feel one of these muscles like behind your knee or, in the quad, the calf. It just, that can't be a, there's no such thing as a fun injury, but that's the kind of thing you probably feel every time you walk, every time you run, every time you take a step, you stand up, sit down. It just can't be fun. So you certainly feel for these guys.
I would just say that the one thing about these injuries is at least it's spring training, right? Like, I feel like if it was the season, some of these injuries, guys would just be trying to play through it, and we might not even hear about them, right? You might not even hear, you guys just go out there and play, especially late in the year, probably last year, like in September. I imagine a ton of these injuries were happening that we didn't even hear about, and that's part of the reason why, things probably fell off at the end of the season. So I just, it's just, it's, spring training, just rest these guys. I'm not too worried about them ready and ready for opening day, or even a week into opening day. Last year we saw with Seiya Suzuki, and they made some raw interesting roster decisions to kind of not even like attempt to cover for it, not going with the right fielder last year. So in that case, it's like, yeah, don't sacrifice your position just because one of these guys are hurt, but don't try to force them to come in.
I do think the Cubs have a lot better depth this season where they could hopefully overcome, maybe one starting guy not being ready. I don't think we're near that point yet, but I do like their depth a lot better. Before we leave poor Caleb Killian in the dust, his injury is called the teres major, and that's T-E-R-E-S major, and it's a muscle at the bottom of the back of the shoulder. So, you find your shoulder blade back there. It's a muscle kind of right at the bottom of that. I had to look it up because I certainly do not know what a teres major is or did not prior to this. But oh boy, anytime you hear the shoulder, you hear all the different injuries. You hear the rotator cuff, the capsule. It's not any of those, fortunately. It's just a muscular strain. But boy, it's the kind of thing where you just worry that even with the expected time out, it's not going to quite heal for him. And like Jeremy said, he looked good this spring. The results were good. The velocity was firm. It just sucks to see a guy lose half his season as he works his way through the preseason.
Spring training injuries. I'm saying it's a bummer.
It
Like,
is.
and a big part of it too is that there's so much optimism. Like, every team, even the teams that kind of know they're not going to be very competitive, you haven't lost yet. Got players that you haven't had at bat yet. There's still reason to think that you're improved from last year to this year. So that's why it stinks so much, and a real big setback for him.
Here's my question for the two of you as we're talking about every team is competitive. Every team starts the season 0-0. What is your favorite spring training cliche? Because I certainly have mine, but I want to hear from the two of you. What's your favorite spring training cliche that you hear about guys, about teams, from teams every spring?
I'm trying to think of what my, I mean, the obvious one, I guess I'll go with, and hopefully it's not yours, Randall, but I'll just go with the best shape of his life.
You
That's,
took mine,
I took
Jeremy.
him. Well, you
Darn
should have
it.
said it, Randall. You
I
shouldn't
should
have
have. You're
asked.
right. I
But
should
like,
have.
I just, for once, I want to hear some guy come into camp and be like, wow, he's in really crappy shape. Like, he
Was
looks
just
awful.
eating potato chips and pizza all
Because it's it
winter.
spins both ways. It's like, oh, he gained 15 pounds, he's so much more, and then it's like, last year he was too heavy, so he lost 15 pounds, and you're like, what? Well, last year you were writing about how great it was he gained 15 pounds. So like, it's just, those are, I guess, the ones. But Randall, I'm sorry I took yours.
No, I don't know. What else is popular cliche wise? Like, because that's the big one. That was certainly the first one to come to mind. I'm having a hard time thinking of a cliche For
You know,
teams
it's
into
that
spring training.
every team starts the season 0-0. Every team starts the season at, you know, leading the division. That's always one you hear. Maybe a team that's not, very little is expected of them, you hear. I think we're going to surprise some people this year when the team is not going to be very good. When the projections come out, the Pecota and the FanGraphs, and, you know, they're very low on a team, the manager or maybe one of the more vocal
I believe
players
you're
will
trying to
say, you
say
know,
Pedro Grifol.
I don't want to name names or anything, but they'll always say, you know, we don't put a whole lot of stock in that. We think we're gonna do better than that. You hear him in the broadcast, and I don't want to throw poor Ted Lilly under the bus, but he's been sitting in on the TV broadcast last night, the Thursday night game, and I believe he was in on one of the split squad games today, Friday. He's just kind of one cliche after another, kind of strung together. Like every player, you know, is really a good young guy. Talented player. There's just not a whole lot of analysis going on. So, you know, you dig deep enough into spring training, you really stick your head in the water, and it's just kind of a whole ocean of cliches, which is ironic because only one of the spring training sites is anywhere near an ocean.
Well, I just want to say about Ted Lilly, who I did not realize was announcing games. I heard some of the highlights, and I was like, I was wondering, trying to figure out who the voice
Well,
that
there you
voice
go.
was. But I think, yeah, Ted Lilly, that's interesting. But I'm gonna say that Rick Sutcliffe does the same thing in the midseason, so I don't know if it's
Yes.
necessarily a
Oh,
spring
I don't.
training
You're
game.
right. I should not imply that that's exclusive to Ted Lilly. I think it's kind of the go-to for former players who have made a post-playing career, broadcasting career, where it's just a whole lot of cliches strung together.
Right, because
So
it's a Sutcliffe.
I don't want to throw poor Ted Lilly under the bus the way the 2007 Diamondbacks did in the
Oof.
National League Division
Yeah.
Series.
Well, yeah, then throwing the glove on the mound. But to
Yeah.
Sutcliffe, every guy that comes in for the Cubs is like, oh, this is a good young-looking guy, right? This guy's
Exactly.
just every single one of them. And then hopefully they are, and most of them, you know, could be. But it's just funny to hear Sutcliffe do it. And so I guess Ted Lilly learned from the best. He's learning from
That's
Sutcliffe
true.
at spring training.
That's true. From you, Rick. I learned it from watching you.
So the thought is what, mid-July? Like a minimum for
Yeah,
Killian?
All-Star break. Council made a point of saying that the injury recovery time for this one can be more variable. So, you know, you could be optimistic and say maybe he's back by the end of June, 4th of July, or you could be pessimistic. I'm, you know, stating the obvious here. You could be pessimistic, say August or even the whole season. So I like to think that that All-Star break is probably a nice target. And they say game action. So there's always the question of, you know, will he be able to start ramping up again and getting the arm loose and then back in games by the All-Star break? Or is that kind of when he'll be physically cleared to start working out again? So that's always the question. But, you know, I hate to say this about Caleb Killian. I'm not expecting anything from him this season just because any kind of arm injury, and especially a shoulder injury, just to me, that's kind of like, okay, he's done for the year. And if you get anything from him, it's gravy.
Right, I was just about to say that. It's like, you know, he's still even trying to work himself back onto the radar of the Cubs. So like, it's hard to see like how he's gonna come back. Who knows how he's gonna come back, when he's gonna come back, and then just try to start, you know, rehabbing and getting into Iowa. Then he just to put himself on the radar to get the call up to the Cubs. It feels like that's gonna take a lot of time. So it's hard to see how he probably will be contributing to the Cubs in 2024, and that just sucks because it's at some point you're gonna have to come to a decision on a guy like Caleb Killian. And so like it sucks that this year is almost a wash.
Yeah. Well, real quickly here, one starting pitcher down. Jeremy, it's March 8th. If you had to pick a name today, fifth starter in the Cubs rotation today, who's your pick?
Right. So I don't know if he's necessarily pitched amazing. But I think I'm going to go with Jordan Wicks. I just think it's going to be Wicks. The way he's looking has looked pretty solid enough, and I don't think anybody's done enough to take it from him, right? I think Wesnesky pitched pretty well in his last start, but not great before that. So I think it's going to be Jordan Wicks.
I am also firmly on the Jordan Wicks train. I think Assad will make the team in that swingman role again. I think Wisniewski probably starts the season at AAA as your sixth or your seventh starter, first guy up when you need an arm. And, you know, I also put Drew Smyly here on the rundown. I don't want him anywhere near that fifth starter spot. You know, no, thank you. We've all seen the Drew Smyly experience. The two of you were probably present for what
Yeah.
will be Drew Smyly's best start as a Cub, and I think it's a whole lot of all downhill from there.
I was gonna say, well, he went downhill on Yan Gomes,
He
but
did. They both went downhill.
yeah, but I was gonna say, what happens when the Dodgers come into town in April? I feel like, you know, Drew Smyly, you gotta
Okay,
throw him
you can
out
give him
there.
that one spot start, and then that'll be it.
Well, last week we looked at over under. Jeremy went to Fangraphs. He pulled up projections. We started with the outfield last week. Want to pivot to infielders, and we are going, let's see, the middle infield is
Correct.
what we're looking at here today. So a specific, that was not on the rundown. The rundown just says infielders. So
Yeah,
we
I
need
forgot
that
to
middle in
edit that.
there. We need
I was
that
going to put
middle in there.
middle in there,
It's
but I
good. No,
forgot.
it's funny. So we got four guys here. Nico, Dansby, Madrigal, Mastroboni. Randall, do you want the honors this week to give us the projection, and then we'll go over under.
I would be more than happy to. So, courtesy of Jeremy, who finds these are the Fangraph projections for each of these four infielders we discussed, give you the slash line, give you the home run prediction, and we'll give you the predicted FWAR. And of course, you simply take the over or the under. And as you would tell me, Ronan, I am now in the position to tell you, you may not, what's the word? You may not,
Push.
what's the, you may not push. I thought that was it. Just wanted to be sure. You may not push. You do have to pick an over or an under. We begin with the newly minted Gold Glove second baseman, Nico Hoerner. They predict a slash line 278. 339 on the on-base percentage, 398 slugging, 12 homers, and a 3.8 FWAR. Are you taking Jeremy the over the under?
I'm taking the over. I think Nico's going to have another great year. I think he's a defensive wizard. So I don't necessarily know if he's going to hit 12 home runs, but I'm going on the over.
Yeah.
Ronan.
He's improved each of the last two off seasons. Noticeable improvements year after year. I think that trend continues. I'm going with the over.
I'm also taking the over. So it's a clean sweep on the over. For Nico Hoerner. We move to his middle infielder partner, Dansby Swanson, and the projection 252 on the average, 323 on base, 453 slugging, 23 home runs, and 3.7 FWAR. Ronan, are you taking the over or the under on Dansby Swanson?
Well, I'm going to take the under. And the only reason, the primary reason is I can't take the over on everything, right? It's like I got to filter in some unders here. And Dansby this year is the guy I'm going with the under on. I think he's going to be solid. I actually think he's going to hit more than 23 home runs. I think that's going to go up here this year. But I could see him maybe missing 2 weeks or something with a little injury that ends up bringing the overall WAR down over the course of the full season. So I will take the under, though I am high on Dansby. I think he's going to be a fine player this year.
All right, Jeremy, are you like Ronan, high on Dansby?
So Ronan's thought process was a little bit why I went under on Cody Bellinger last week, because I was like, I can't go over on everybody. I'm gonna go over on Dansby just because I feel like Dansby has not gotten the credit he deserves. And I know he's an all-star and a gold glover, but like you look at his last 4 years, like this guy's put up five, six more win seasons, like not every year, but like a handful of them. And he's been so good. And so I think I'm gonna go over. The defense is great. I agree with Ronan. I think he'll go over the 23 home runs. I think we'll see some power this year, a little more power. So I'm gonna go over the 3.7 WAR.
All right. I am going to agree with Jeremy on this one. I am going to take the over. Ronan, your point about not taking the over on everybody is fair. I will make my bones on the under further down this list. Speaking of further down this list, we move to Nick Madrigal, who some say is deficient in his tools. The predicted slash line 282 on the average, 334 on base, 375 slugging, two homers, and exactly one FWAR. Jeremy, how about Nick Madrigal for you?
Nick Madrigal, who unfortunately is one of these spring training injuries with the right hamstring strain. I'm gonna go under, Randall, just like you said. Two home runs. I'm going under two home runs. Like I know he had a couple balls that probably should have gotten out in other ballparks like Pittsburgh, but oof, I'm going under. I just don't see it with Nick. I don't think he's gonna be the guy. So under one WAR.
Yeah, same
Ronan?
here. I don't think he's going to be around all that long. I don't think he's going to be on the active roster that much this season. I'll take the under.
Well, it was a clean over sweep on Nico. It's a clean under sweep on Nick Madrigal. I'm also taking the under. I agree. I think this is probably his last camp as a Cub, his last season as a Cub. He may not even be around by midseason. So I'm taking the under on Nick Madrigal. And finally, we move to utility man Miles Mastroboni, who I think probably has a spot secured on the opening day roster as your kind of last guy off the bench, your pinch runner, that kind of role. His predicted slash line 256, 334 on the on base, 364 slugging, with also one home run. They do not give him a full WAR, though, 0.1, 1/10 of an FWAR. Ronan, where do you stand on Miles Mastroboni?
Does he have options or no?
That's a good question. I could look that up.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I mean, here's my first thought. It will be over 0.1, but he's not going to be around that much anyway. But I'm curious if he's a guy they can send to Iowa and let him kind of cook down there for a bit. Because then I could see him being in the mix, injury replacement, a guy that can come up and help out at a couple of positions.
Yeah, so I one thing I would point out with this Fangraphs projection, and part of the reason I put him on because I thought we only had like three guys on there, so I thought add Miles Mastrobody because I split up middle infielders and corner infielders because I feel like we're gonna have so many guys in the corner infield to talk about. But this was only 10 games that they projected him for, so that's why the WAR is so low at 0.1. So like I was kind of surprised. I was like, huh, only 10 games because I thought he might get an opportunity to play in more than 10 games. But I'm actually going to go with the over with this because I think he looks like he has two options. So
You are
yeah,
correct. That's
he,
what I have as well,
yeah.
courtesy of Fangraphs. Two options remaining.
Oh, I was
Yeah, then he'll
checking
be around.
Arizona Phil, man, Cubs reporter. So I think that, yeah, I think he'll be around. I think more than 10 games makes sense. I'm going to go over this because I feel like it's low with the 0.1 WAR for doing it on the WAR. I just feel like he's going to do more. I think he's going to be around and he's showing some leather, man. He played some shortstop in this spring training, and I was like, damn, like Miles Mastroponi can make plays with the short. I don't know if he's got the arm either, but he can make some plays. So I feel like if Dansby ever gets out, like he's gonna be the guy. I mean, you can move Nico over, obviously, but Miles can play somewhere in the middle infield. So I think Mastroponi is gonna have more than Madrigal. That's I'm gonna make that prediction. Mastroponi over Madrigal.
All right, I'm going to be the contrarian here. I'm going to take the under on Miles Mastroboni. I just think that if he gets any kind of extended playing time, there's not going to be a whole lot of accumulated mathematical value. So I'm going to go under on Miles Mastroboni.
Disappointing, Randall.
I'm
Yeah, I'm
sorry,
leaving Miles there
Miles.
too.
It's not personal, Miles. I didn't even call him Italian American Jose Macias like I was thinking earlier. We'll save that for later in the
Oof.
season.
Oh man.
Any other Cubs thoughts right now? I got a question for you, Jeremy, but any other Cubs players' thoughts? I don't want to overlook it before we move on. There's other MLB stuff I want to get your guys' thoughts on.
I don't have any specific thoughts right now on the Cubs. I'm just like, it's that weird time of spring training where I'm like, all right, we're like 2 weeks, 3 weeks into this. Let's get going here. Like, I want to see some real games, which good, nice enough that they're gonna be playing in Korea in like a week or two, so we will get to see some real major league games. But like, I'm ready for the Cubs to play some real major league games. So let's get going.
Yeah, the novelty of baseball is back is starting to wear a little bit off. It's right around the time that the time change comes about, and because of course Arizona does not observe daylight savings, the end result is that the games here in Illinois are on an hour later because only one of them has changed times. It's usually right around the time that happens that you start to say, like Jeremy said, okay, let's get this going. One thing that is jumping out to me is Shota Imanaga. He's made two spring training starts. He's given up a home run in each of those starts. And Jeremy, did I see he had another five strikeouts today to
Yes,
go with the five?
another five
So
strikeouts.
yeah, so in his two, short spring starts, two home runs allowed, 10 strikeouts. And I'm wondering if that's a little bit of a preview of what it's going to be like in the early going as he adjusts a little bit. Of course, what did we point out in our Shota-centric episode is that the long balls could be a little bit of an issue. So kind of funny to see that play out in this non-important, harmless fashion so far.
Right, he's basically been the guy that people kind of said he was. He's give up fly balls and he gets strikeouts. But I'm going to say one thing that is not really Cubs centric necessarily and more just kind of general baseball thing. Every day I've been kind of like seeing that ESPN has spring training baseball on during the day, which I think is cool. I mean, it's great that ESPN has spring training baseball. I mean, they obviously don't really, it's more like a ESPN production of spring training baseball is even worse than Sunday night baseball, but whatever. It's still cool that they're having it on, but it's ridiculous to me because they only seem to broadcast Grapefruit League games, and it only seems to ever be the Red Sox or the Mets or the Yankees, and maybe there's like an Astros in there or something like that. That's it. And it's like I realize they're doing these games at like 11 o'clock, probably noon their time, and they're still going on at 2, and they probably don't have to get some Cactus League games out there. But it's a little like every day it's kind of like you're just watching another Yankees game, and I'm like, hey, there's some Cactus League baseball out there too. Let's get some Cactus League games on ESPN. But I like that they do it. I just wish they spread it out a little bit.
Saw a headline here today. I need Randall's take more than anything on this. Cardinals pitcher Lance Lynn ejected from a spring training game by Angel Hernandez. Randall,
Oof.
what do you got there? This happened.
I'm gonna revert to my go-to Ken Watanabe in the first most recent Godzilla film, Let Them Fight. No huge fan of Lance Lynn. But I'm even less of a fan of Angel Hernandez. And you know what? Good for, I'm going to say this, good for Lance Lynn for setting the tone early. Telling Angel Hernandez, we're not dealing with your BS this season. If I have to get ejected from a spring training game to make the point, so be it. I don't think, you know, I know you were both kind of fans of Joe West, the individual, if not necessarily the on-field umpire. I feel like there's nobody willing to say that about Angel Hernandez. I don't think when Angel Hernandez finally hangs it up, not a moment too soon, I don't think there's anybody going to be anybody willing to say, ah, he was a great guy off the field. He was a good personality. They're all just going to thumb their nose at him and say, good riddance. See you later.
I don't know if I'd ever thought I'd see Randall taking Lance Lynn's side on something,
Well,
right?
I mean, you don't like it when I don't take a side. So I'm going to collapse to one or the other here instead of being Schrodinger's Randall, quantum possibility
Ugh.
existing in two states at once.
There you go.
Ali
Gotta get you out of
Marmol
that box,
also.
Randall.
Got to get me out of the box. That's right. Okay, I'm stuck in here. Got the poison gas. Is going to be in here. Not going to be in here. No way to live.
Lynn tossed, Ali Marmol tossed too. From Angel here in a spring training game. So, quite the scene down there. I don't think that was on ESPN. It was a Friday night game, I guess, but I don't know. I have no idea if it was on one of your East Coast broadcasts, Jeremy, of these spring training games.
That's all they do. I mean, they probably have had Cardinals games. I'm telling you, every day it seems like at 11 o'clock Central Time, they have a spring training game on, which is cool, but only like 90% of them are Red Sox, Mets, and Yankees, and often just Red Sox and Mets, or Red Sox and Yankees, or Yankees Mets. And it's like, all right, let's switch this up. There's more spring training on the west side of the country.
Yeah. Another thing that popped up here in the last week, we got new renderings. We were just talking about this renderings. We renderings about the new Sox Park, maybe. Renderings from Las Vegas, though, is what caught my attention this week. Jeremy, you're shaking your head. If you don't know what we're talking about, just go online, look it up. New renderings came out. Jeremy, what did you think when these popped up here? It's like a Sydney Opera House type looking structure right there in the middle of Vegas.
Yeah, I just saw it and I said, this is BS. This is never going to get built. This is just PR right here. Like, even you look at it, and any person who's like, first of all, I saw it and I said, well, that's way too like intricate, right? Like, they're never going to build that for a baseball stadium, to be honest. But then you look at it and you're like, that's not even a baseball stadium. It's got a white roof. It has no batter's eye. There's no bullpens. It's like there's not an air conditioning system for like it's if it's indoors. Like, what is this? Like, how they just throw this up and you're expected to believe that somehow the Las Vegas A's are going to build this stadium. I've seen a million other Oakland A's renderings. This one doesn't change anything for me. I'm going to be honest. The more I see of this and like things that aren't serious to me, at least, the less likely I think it is they're actually moving to Las Vegas. So it's just crazy to
Right,
me.
that's where I'm at. Jeremy, there's no lights in the rendering.
Yeah, it's not a baseball stadium. It's just like an AI generated image, and people are like, oh, wow, that looks really cool. It's not a baseball stadium, though.
That is the whole point of these renderings, is to get people to say, oh wow, that looks really cool, while conveniently glossing over the fact that, you know, by definition, it's almost not going to look like it does in the rendering. That's the whole point of rendering, is it gives people something to talk about that isn't the implausibility of the design or the unfeasibility of the public money going for it. There's one thing actually that's standing out to me in this rendering, and that is you can see they've got this incredibly weird curved roof with the video board built in. Beyond that curved roof are a level of bleachers, and you know, I guess that's where they expect the budget people to sit in the daytime in Las Vegas in the summer. If you want to end up completely well done on both sides, you can sit in these bleachers that look like they're out beyond the coverage of the roof. So it's an incredibly silly rendering, but it did, you know what? It did its job because it got people to talk about it, and that's really all these are for.
Yeah, it's sloppy though. I'm kind of surprised at how sloppy it is. There's one umpire on the field. Now, maybe
Well,
that doesn't matter to some people, but I think if you're trying to be a legitimate business and you're putting out a legitimate rendering of a multi-billion dollar stadium you're going to build, the attention to detail is sort of part of the whole deal there. It's how you build confidence. So you put one umpire out there, you got a base runner with his back to the action. It's like he's staring out into the outfield as the game's going on. Is that intentional or is it incompetent, right? Because somebody with the A's must have looked at this and said, are we really going to put this out into the world?
Honestly, I just think it's an AI generated image. They just like put a bunch of stuff into AI, generated it, and they're like, oh yeah, that looks good. And then they just put it out. And the funny thing is, I believe the A's had like an embargo on talking about this. You know, they wouldn't let anybody talk about this, and then they just broke their own embargo. But I just want to say, like, just in terms of rendering, it's like it's one thing like when you're kind of announcing something and like the White Sox did, I think, like, oh, we're interested in doing this, we'll put up some renderings, just so like everybody knows it's not gonna look like this. But the A's, like, they're supposed to be getting into the critical time of like they're going to be building a stadium, right? So to put up something like you said, it looks so unprofessional. There's no attention to detail. There's nothing and to it. It just seems ridiculous to me. And yeah, it's like, I mean, I don't know, Randall. Maybe, you know, we all complain about the $100 bleachers. Maybe they'll be charging that in Vegas up there. But that goal, I just wanted to point out, I thought it was funny. They had like the 20, like, is Zach Geloff going to be there in 2029 when they had the whole roster up there? It just was ridiculous. And I just saw it. And my first thought was, that's never going to happen. Now I don't even know if Las Vegas is happening.
Yeah, there's certainly a whole lot of uncertainty still at this point. Jeremy, that is funny. And that's the kind of thing you can tell they just took a lineup from some game last season and popped that on the graphic. And that's fine. You're not going to make any, predictions in your rendering as to who's going to be in the lineup. But hey, if you're running out the same lineup in 2029 that you did for a game in 2023, that's a pretty good continuity among your roster, I would say. You mentioned that it seems like a lot of the parts of this image are artificially generated. Actually, if you look right behind home plate, just to the third base side of home plate, you can actually see a gentleman in a green jersey that's backwards. It's clearly a
Oh,
number
God.
24 jersey, but the four and the two are reversed, like somebody took the image and mirrored it. So, Ronan, you mentioned attention to detail, and it just doesn't seem like there was a whole lot of it.
The one thing I think would be fun is like, wouldn't it be fun if they had like Ohtani in the lineup and like they put all these big, they probably can't do that like a tampering thing, but like, I would love the confidence there of, yeah, we're moving to Vegas and then we're going to get guys like Ohtani to come play for us.
They
A little
probably
bit of
could have
swag there in these nonsense renderings.
put like a legitimate A's lineup out there, like, oh, we got Reggie Jackson out there and Mark McGwire, and put that out there. Maybe somebody can get it. But like, I just look at it and I like, first of all, those green, like, I don't know what that lights or like what's going on up there. All I can think, I saw a meme with the Ronald, no, the Seinfeld with the Kenny Rogers chicken, right? And Kramer comes out, it's all red, and Jerry's like, what's going on in there? But the meme was, it was all green, and Jerry's like, what's going on there? He's like, I'm watching the Oakland A's, in the upper deck, because like, what is going on like with that green light? Like, what's going on there?
It's bizarre. Real, real bizarre rendering that came out here. We're checking out. Anything else player-wise worth noting? Anything else from spring training?
Yeah, we mentioned earlier one of the so-called Boris Four came off the boards. The Giants ended up with Matt Chapman. Really would have liked him as a Cub, but Jeremy, you pointed out he ended up getting less money than Bellinger did, even.
Yeah, it kind of surprised me, and I thought, and I just want to say some things that, like, I've seen some like weird takes, I think, from Cubs fans, and I'm not saying that, like, I was kind of high on Matt Chapman, and other people, I understand why they're not as high on Matt Chapman as me, but like, I saw one take that called like Matt Chapman a low ceiling option. I'm like, this guy has put up four WAR like every year for like the last 5 years. Like, how is he low ceiling?
Yeah, if that's your low ceiling, I'd like to see your high
Yeah,
ceiling.
so like when I saw this deal, and I get why necessarily, and especially after reading that article about Morel today, I totally understand why they don't want to take like reps away from Christopher Morel. But like, I look at it and I just see like, wow, like Matt Chapman for 3 years, $54 million on opt out after every year. Like, because like if he's good and he goes, like, is that really the biggest deal for the Cubs? No, I don't think so. So it's like, I just think he could have hit some bombs at Wrigley, played some elite defense with Nico and Dansby. So I saw it and I was a little disappointed when he went to the Giants. And I didn't want, I there were a bunch of teams I think I would have been okay with him going to. I just hate when like National League teams, I know they're not really competitors, but now with the six wild cards, like, we are competitors, or three wild cards, six playoff spots, we are competitors with the Giants. So I was a little disappointed he went to the Giants as well.
And again, the breakdown here, he gets kind of the Bellinger structure, opt-outs after year one and two of a 3-year deal. 3 years, 54 million, and that breaks down to 20 million, 18 million, and 16 million across the 3 seasons. So less money than Bellinger. It's yeah, it's surprising. I was kind of hoping Passan or Rosenthal would give us one more spring training surprise. It was not meant to be. It is disappointing, like Jeremy said, to see him go to another kind of middling NL team that you'll probably be competing with some of the at-large playoff spots for. Yeah, it's a little disappointing, but it does make sense, like you said, that they're going to want to give Morel the reps, and hopefully that works out. Because if Morel does not work out at third base, it's a whole lot of kind of fill-in guys or hoping that Matt Shaw really forces the issue defensively by midseason.
Right, and I just feel like I if you were to bet, like, who's gonna, not necessarily bet, but just guess, like, who do you think is more likely to put up like a 3 to 4 win or be a better player next year, Matt Chapman or some combination of like Christopher Morel and Patrick Wisdom, and you who knows, maybe Matt Shaw comes up, I don't know, but people have said him, like, I would be the betting on Matt Chapman. So like I just think Matt Chapman is going to be the better player. But I understand why the Cubs are willing to give Morel a chance, but to me then it's like put the money somewhere else, right? Go get Jordan Montgomery, and then I won't be mad about Matt Chapman going to the Giants.
Any other players of note?
I think I covered it. I don't know if I got anybody left.
Well, our buddy Kern had a question for us. Kern, by the way, right now, very intense. Michigan State hockey doing big things. He's real excited about that. But he had a question for us. Jeremy, what's Kern getting at here with this question that he lobbed into us?
So he lobbed this question about a player going 1 for 4 every day for 5 consecutive seasons. Would that player be a Hall of Famer? And then he was disappointed in us because none of us answered no because he didn't have 10 years of eligibility. But I thought he just meant like any player who, like in
Well, I
their
think you're
career.
missing a key point here. That one is a single.
Yes,
Every
that one is a
time
single.
it's
You're
a
right. You're right.
single.
Exactly.
That's
That's
because,
definitely a
if it's
key
a
point.
home run,
Yeah, if it's a
yeah,
home
different
run,
story.
it's 100%. I did know that yes, that went through my mind. That's definitely a key point. You're absolutely right, Ronan. So I guess I'll start off the bat. My opinion, I think it would be crazy to have a guy with a hit streak that long, as Kern pointed out. And I think people would obviously make a big deal of it. But for me, I don't think about batting average that much or hit streaks necessarily. So like my first thought was like, that's just 250, 250, 250. That's a 500 OPS. I'm like, that guy's not playing 5 consecutive seasons. He's being DFA'd in like 2 months. Like he's not getting the opportunity. Maybe they wouldn't DFA a guy who's on a 60 game hit streak. But I was
There would
like,
be a
I don't,
team.
yeah, there'd be a team,
There.
I guess. I guess it depends on how great defensively he is, right? But I'm like, offensively, that's pretty poor numbers. That's not gonna be good.
Yeah, I don't think any of us differed in the reaction. I think we all said, no, that's not a Hall of Famer. Even if you throw out the 5 season things, there's no on base, there's no slugging. It's you have 1 single a game. So I certainly think that when push came to shove, you would have kind of contrarian people saying, well, he has this hit streak. The 5 consecutive seasons, of course, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. It conveniently ignoring that he didn't really bring anything else statistically. So I think it would become kind of one of those issues that became an issue because people made it an issue. But it, just in terms of baseball logic, no, that's definitely not a Hall of Famer.
Is there a point where it becomes one? Like, what if it's 10 years? Like, there might be a point at some point. Like, if you had 10 consecutive seasons, 162 games, and in every game, you got a single.
A
Granted, no home
1,600 game
runs,
hit
no
streak.
walk. Yeah. Like, at some point, you cross that threshold and you get into it. But it's not, we don't think it's 5 years. I don't think it's
No.
5 years. I'm more of the belief the bat goes to Cooperstown. If
Yeah.
he has batting gloves, they
Correct.
go. You get an exhibit about this incredible feat. I don't think the individual player, but there is a year where you cross that threshold and it's like, okay, at this point, this is crazy enough that this guy's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
Yeah, I.
the defense would have to be just sterling to be a Hall of Famer with, again, a career slash line. Doesn't matter your hit streak, it's still a career slash line of 250, 250, 250. I think you find a good good middle ground there, to represent the guy in the Hall of Fame with some of his memorabilia. Make an exhibit about it, and then he can get a whole wing to himself. The guy who, had a 1,600 game hit streak, but had a career OPS of 500, but do not actually induct him into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I just feel like I just in my head just keeps going back to baseball teams. They're kind of smart these days for the most part. Not all of them, because there's some out in the middle of the country, I would say, that are like behind the times a little bit, but they're smarter than they were 20 years ago. I think any team would like to beat the Colorado Rockies from year 2000. Excuse me, from a team from the year 2000 would like to beat the 2023 Colorado Rockies in terms of front office. But I would just say you got a guy, you want to win baseball games. And I get he's going to be a freak. He's going to go out there. I guess if somebody's willing to give him a chance to do it every day for 10 years, yeah, like, or you're like, this guy's just a freak. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but I would say like honor him somehow in the Hall of Famer in the museum. But like, I'm just like, who's gonna keep giving him a chance when he's not really doing anything to help win your team? That's just like my thought process keeps going back to. It's like he's not gonna get to 5 years. He's not gonna get to 10 years. He's probably not gonna get to 3 months. Like, but maybe just because it's such a freakish thing, it's like you can't cut a guy with a 90-game hit streak, right? So like,
Imagine that PR
yeah.
storm, having to, put that PR release out.
Right. So, right. It's just like my thoughts always go to like, and it's always funny to me because like I hear people talk about batting average and RBIs and certain stats. And I'm always like, I don't even think about that. And it's weird to me because it's like, if you were to ask me who like led the Cubs in RBIs last year, I have no clue. I honestly have no clue because it's not something I ever think about. And
I
maybe
think
that's,
you could take a pretty
I could
educated
take a
guess.
guess, but I don't, I could take a guess. I would take a guess, obviously, but I don't know the correct answer. So like it's just like I sometimes I see that stuff and I'm like, huh, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know the answer. And
You know
so
who else doesn't know the answer? Craig
who?
Counsell.
That's
Yeah,
right.
give
Craig
him
Counsell.
that.
That's right. Yeah. I just remember there was an interview with Theo on Boston Radio before he came to the Cubs in like 2010, or I don't know. He was just on W, I think it was WEEI, and they were just like giving him like, how could you sit this guy? He just, or how do you play JD Drew every day? He only has like 50 RBIs. And Theo's like, honestly, I don't know how many RBIs JD Drew has because that's something I ever look at. We don't look at that. And they're like, how could you say that? I remember this interview, and it was just like insane. And I was like, I remember that was like, I'm like, I really want this guy to be on the Cubs. And
Good
we got
news,
him.
good
Worked out.
news,
Worked
good news
out.
past Jeremy. I've got good
Yeah.
news for you.
Well, I got one more thing here before we break. I was thinking about it when we were talking about Nick Madrigal earlier, whether or not he'll get to two home runs. The best you can, because I've been thinking about this for the last 15 minutes and I'm stumping myself with this. What would you say is the rarest home run that you have seen? And it could be a Cub, it could be an opponent, but I'm talking in the flesh. And I don't mean rare, like a walk-off grand slam is a rare event, but rare, like that guy doesn't hit home runs and you were there for one of them. Randall, you're ready to go. Who do you
I
have?
was fortunate enough to witness in person a John Lester home run.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and John Lester, I'm compelled to say at all times, was a professional hitter. Three career home runs, all of them were to the opposite field. So I was fortunate to see that. He hit it, in fact, off of Lance Lynn against the Twins. So continuing the Lance Lynn theme that we stumbled into. So I'll go with my John Lester home run.
So I think I have a couple. In terms of along the lines of Randall, so I'm gonna say one because just because Randall and I saw it and Ronan mentioned this does not count because you specifically said it does not count, but we've seen two walk off grand slams, man. We've seen that Soriano walk off grand slam in extra innings, and we've seen Randall and I saw the Hayward one. I'm gonna go with one that might bring up memories, not necessarily memories for you, but thoughts for you, Ronan. I'm gonna say I saw Mark Burley hit a home run in Miller Park, and I think you know where I was going with that in terms of maybe some other people saw that home run too. And then we saw Jeff Samardzija hit a home run at Coors Field. I thought that was pretty crazy when he did that. So I think Mark Burley's still my number one. I haven't really thought about like there might be somebody crazier, but like I remember Mark Burley. I was like, holy crap, this guy just homered. He's never hit before.
Any opposing players, Randall? I know you get annoyed when any opposing player homers, but any that really sticks in you. The one I
Sears in your
can, yeah, go
brain.
ahead. I'll take it.
No, I was just saying Sears in your brain. I was sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It was a lost game, so it doesn't really stick in my brain. I do remember it though. I actually saw Gerrit Cole, of all people, hit a home run against the Cubs at Wrigley, which it was a game that was already well out of hand. The Cubs had no chance of winning it, but I did see it happen. Gerrit Cole, not really much of an athlete, an athletic guy as a pitcher, but I saw him do it.
How many career home runs do you think Craig Counsell hit?
I'm gonna go right around his jersey number 30. I think he hit about 30 in his career.
Because I saw one, the game you and I were at, Randall. I feel like there's a rare one I'm sure I've seen, But Council for me seems kind of rare, and it was the game winner and a 1-0 loss.
It
So
was.
that's a brutal one. But I would think, well, yeah, 30 home runs in his career. It seemed rare.
Yeah, my top of my head, it was 20. So I maybe he Council's funny when he talks about his playing career. He's like, I wasn't that guy. But I'm trying to think of like other rare ones. I do remember ones that like I don't did I don't know if he homered, but I that's not necessarily homering, but I remember being really pissed at game 163 with Arcia just like hitting the ball off of Quintana, and like
Yeah.
remember them being like, oh, Quintana owns the Brewers, and then just like freaking Arcia just keeps getting hits, and I was like so mad about that. But I'm trying to think if I've seen one rarer than like Mark Burley, because that feels like Mark Burley hitting a home run is like up there.
We are shorting Council some home runs in
Ooh.
his big league career. 42 career home runs for the current Cubs manager.
Well,
42.
big number in baseball.
It is.
Still
And in
pretty
life.
rare. Yeah, I think I can defend that as one of the rare home runs I've seen, but there's got to be another one. I'm going to dive into sort of the
We're
memory
all
bank
gonna
here.
have to dive into our game logs and our memory banks
Right.
and see if we've seen anything really rare. So that we can I think bring that back around next episode. We'll dive in and see if we've seen anything really uncommon in a major league game. I've seen Joe Mather pitch. I haven't seen him hit a home run, but I saw Joe Mather pitch. So that's not a home run, but that's certainly a rarity, something I've tried to forget. But I can't forget it because it's still there.
Now, if you're talking historic home runs, we all saw Chris Bryant hit his first home run. That's a historic home run up there in Milwaukee. So, things like that. I was trying to think, wasn't there a position player pitching in that game too? I just can't
David
remember what.
Ross,
David Ross. I thought it
David,
was
yeah,
David Ross,
yes.
but I wasn't 100%. I remember Phil Koch going out there, which
Yeah,
is maybe Phil Koch pitching for the Cubs was rare. But I was like, because you were talking about, I was trying to remember position players pitching. I'm like, didn't I think Ross pitched in that game? That was not a game I chose to remember outside of the Bryant home run.
that is a game, that's a distinct moment that changed Randall's life forever. That game broke your spirit a bit. That's your last road game, Randall, if my memory serves me right. No, you were in Denver.
Yes,
You did
Denver.
see the games
I
in
it's
Denver.
it it I do believe it was my last game at Miller Park. I don't believe I've been up there
Yeah.
since. That's kind
And
of my choice.
the only other road game has been here
Correct,
that
correct.
you've
Which
attended.
those
Yes.
games
I
broke
don't.
him too.
Well, yeah, the Cubs did not play particularly well in that series either. No, yeah, I'm not someone who goes to a whole lot of road games anyway, but yeah, I think, I would certainly have to go check my game logs, but it might have been from that game in 2015 at Miller Park, what was then Miller Park. It might have been that 4 year gap all the way until seeing the Cubs on the road at Coors Field. So one beer stadium to another.
Jeremy, I lied here too. I've got one more question. This one's
Go
for
for it.
Randall, though. Randall, Jeremy and I were talking about this previously. The idea of a day-night doubleheader, day game at Wrigley, night game at Sox Park, same day, take the red line down. Jeremy and I are pretty much in for this in June. Are you coming?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
You'll do both. Both.
Always in motion, the future is, but I certainly won't say no.
But I'm asking for a commitment to both, not a, hey, I'll go to the Cubs game with you, and then I'm bailing post game. I'm going home. You guys go to the Sox game. We're looking for a full commitment here.
Well, you know what? I'm going to talk to my lawyers about it. We're going to drop a
Okay.
contract. We're going to look at some terms. I'm not saying I'm not going to commit to it. I'm just saying, I want to see some terms here before I sign.
Speaking of terms, can I make a condition? You either commit to both, or it's only the Sox game.
Oh, I like
Yes.
that.
Wow.
I like
Jeremy
that.
playing hardball. Question of,
Yeah, there you go. Well, you gotta have negotiating power.
does waiting benefit the player or the teams more? I'm in the negotiations now here.
It aligns three times this year where it makes sense. A day game either at Wrigley or at Sox Park, then a night game at the other ballpark. Three times. What an awesome luxury you have in the city of Chicago that you can even do that. We gotta make it happen. June, Cubs Giants, I think it's Sox Astros that night. Randall, you're coming. We're making you come. We're gonna have a good time.
All
So,
right.
something to look forward to here in a couple months out. We'll be back soon with more spring training notes here as we get ready for opening day. See you next time.